welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It is episode number 247, and I am your host, James Gilmore. Joining me, who's that I've got in the corner over there? What's his name? His name's Keith Andrew.
Hello. It's been a while.
It has it's been 2 weeks. Yeah, it has been a while for you. Where have you been, damn it?
I don't know. Where was I last week? Oh, I was in London, wasn't I? I was in London.
Doing London things in that London.
London Town for the Free-to-Play Summit. It's talking about free-to-play games.
Ah,
I don't even play any of them, James, but they're very big.
I hear they're the future.
They're like £2 chickens, apparently. That was one of the stories to come out. But so.
They're like £2 chickens, only they cost nothing, presumably.
Well, yeah, someone compared... someone on a panel who wasn't a fan of free-to-play games, let's say, compared them to... the commoditization of food at supermarkets is a very, very deep metaphor. He was suggesting that the quality of free-to-play games is naff, in the same way that if you go to a supermarket of your choice and buy a chicken for £2, it's not going to be best. It's going to be pumped full of water, and
he was essentially,
it didn't go down very well in the room, to be honest.
He was comparing free-to-play to Tesco value.
Yeah, pretty much. And in a room that was in a conference called the Free to Play Summit, in a room full of developers who make free to play games, it was a very, saying you got heckled is putting it lightly, to be honest. It was entertaining. A lot of people read the article, so I'm very pleased he made that a slightly naff comparison.
Analogy.
Well, that's where I was.
Good for you. Well, I was here quietly mocking free to play games behind your back. I wasn't really. I try and stay neutral.
But I don't actually play them, but, you know.
No. You just,
they put on a great spread, so that's why I go.
Well, I have to actually play the damn thing, so, you know, any ire on my part is entirely justified. However,
get a new job.
This week's been great. Like, I'm in an unfashionably good mood, because the past few days I've had to review a bunch of games, and a huge chunk of them have been really good. Like, really good. And it's left me in this quite high spirits. So I'm counting on you to crush my sunny disposition.
This is what I do best. And without Pete here as well, with his usual happiness.
Yeah, I feel like I have to compensate. I have to up the happiness quota, because Pete usually brings the sunshine.
He does, yeah. I don't bring the sunshine.
No. All right, well, you cast your shadows, and we'll talk about updates! Bad Piggies! Is anyone still playing Bad Piggies? Keith, did you start playing Bad Piggies?
I had a brief dalliance with it. I appreciate the pigs. The problem is my brain doesn't work very well, so if you ask it to make something, that, you know, I'll think, well, no, can't you make it for me?
Oh, I see. Apathy gets the better of you, and you go, can't they just build their own helicopters?
Laugh. Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough. Well, and if anyone is still playing it, then they're about to get a nice Halloween-themed update. It's called Tusk Till Dawn. It's going to add 30 brand new levels to the game to keep you busy over the Halloween period. You'll also get a bunch of new masks for the piggies to wear. So the picture shows a little devil mask and a little vampire mask and a little piggy Jason Voorhees mask, which is very cute.
Rovio, they love seasonal things, don't they? They're obsessed with the seasons of the year.
Angry Birds was exactly the same, and they're really getting into the spirit of it, which is a good excuse to knock out an update and also get like publicity, because everyone goes, oh, it's Halloween, let's go and get some piggy stuff.
I know, what's with people? They suddenly think, I want the whole world to reflect the fact it's Halloween. I must have a Halloween game. I must have a Christmas game. It's just weird.
Blame the Americans for Halloween. It's not a British holiday, is it? That's where the Americans say, wander around knocking on doors saying, give me all of your cash and your firstborn.
Yeah, it's pagan, isn't it? It's
one of them festivals.
Maybe Rovio are pagans, I don't know.
Quite possibly. It had nothing to do with pigs anyway, but whatever. You're celebrating it with piggies, so you can go and get that now if you want to. Also, EA has updated Real Racing 3 to include Ferraris. Three Ferraris, to be specific. We got the FF model. Which I'm going to assume is just the Ferrari, probably.
Fast Ferrari.
But yes, exactly, there you go. Also, the 458 Italia and the F12 Berlinetta.
They're all my favourites.
I know, exactly. I take that one out at the weekend when I can. I jump between that and the Zonda, because otherwise, you know, The engines go a bit rusty and rubbish. Yeah, you get three Ferraris, which you can drive around in, because I suppose that's what you do in Real Racing 3. Also, there's a new racetrack, which is a Spanish circuit called Circuit de Catalunya? Barcelona de Catalunya? Something like that, I don't know. It's a Spanish circuit, it probably goes round and round.
Is it a real one?
I assume so. A bunch of the stuff in Mural Racing are real tracks, I'm pretty sure.
He said so. No idea. You've not done your research at all.
I did actually play Mural Racing 3 for about a week.
I need you to visit Spain and find this track. And
oh, that kind of research.
It.
Oh, I can do that research. Yeah. No problems. I'll put it on the company gold card.
It's always funny when any racing game comes out with Nürburgring on it, journalists always use this excuse to go over to Germany and take pictures of the actual circuit compared to the new, you know, the digitized version. You think, we've seen this. It's a circuit, isn't it?
But it's Laguna Seca for me. That's the one that I always recognize from all the racing games, because it's got that kind of that S turn where it goes downhill at the same time. That's dead tricky. And also there was a Formula One game back on the Amiga, which I used to play, where the track that I would always race was the Italian F1. And I kind of knew that in the back of me hand.
Everyone on old F1 games used to like Melbourne because you could cut across half of it and saved 20 seconds off your time, until they brought in things like black flags and stuff in Formula One games. It was great.
So they got all realistic and boring.
It was always the first one as well, because it used to, I think it is actually now again, isn't it? It's one of the first on the circuit. So you'd get off to a cracking start and be lapping.
Actually, there's a new Formula One game out called F1 Challenge, which I reviewed last week, which is it's all right. It's a bit weird. It's a top-down game in the style of Micro Machines, which is a bit odd for a Formula One racer, because, you know, it's that very, very high-octane, most powerful cars in the world type sport. And when you're controlling it by, like, dragging your finger to like, essentially lead it by the nose around corners, it feels a bit weird. It's a little bit unnatural. You kind of want to do power slides and stuff, because that's how you play those games generally. So the form feels a bit at odds with the...
Well, and in reality as well, the people driving the cars aren't doing so from above, are they? They're actually in the cars.
That is true, Keith Andrew. This is why...
It would make it interesting if they were flying in helicopters above or something with remote control or something. That would be
That would be good. That would essentially be a kind of a racing Robot Wars then, wouldn't it?
Be safer as well. Yeah, they need something to liven it up. It's very boring these days, isn't it?
As I know, no one crashes. No one bursts into flames spontaneously.
No, that German guy wins all the time as well.
Anyway, if you want to play Real Racing 3 and race Ferraris, you can do that for free right now. It's all free, apart from the bits, which cost money. Good old free-to-play. Finally, New Star Soccer, of BAFTA award-winning and Pocket Gamer Gold award-winning fame. It has got an update. It's version 1.52, and it adds a whole bunch of stuff, one of which is female players, just to make things a little bit more...
Female players?
Yes. I don't know if that's on the same team, whether they'll have, like, cross-gendered teams of guys and girls all playing together, black and white, rich and poor, male and female, ebony and ivory. You played this one, didn't you?
I did play it. I did play it a while ago. But I'm not really sure how you... Because you just... I can't... there's no characterization to it, there is it. I suppose you have to give your manager a name or something, but I don't ever remember being a gender at all in that game.
Well, I guess.
What do they mean you're playing? What do they mean you're playing? You're managing female teams.
It gives you new boot options, as in you can change presumably the type of your player's boots, and the choice between male and female players. So yeah, I guess you can populate your team with lady players now.
Yeah, I guess that. But given the graphical style, I'm not sure how you would even notice, to be honest. But
they have a 2-pixel ponytail, and that's it.
I wonder what you were going to say.
You can tell. No, not those 2 pixels. That's something entirely different. There's also some other things as well. You can now do headers. You can header the ball to do goals with. That's good. I watch a lot of football, as you can tell. You can also hire agents and trainers to help you out with your leagues and that.
But the nice thing about New Star Soccer is that you can play it, well, kind of a game point of view, in that you can play it with complete disconnection to football. You're kind of... It's just kind of physics, so you're kind of learning how to play it rather than thinking I'm pretending I'm on the football pitch like you do with other football games. If you see the distinction that I'm very poorly explaining there.
Well, that sounds like my kind of football game, one which has very little connection to actual football.
Yeah, well, it hasn't got real teams, is it, as I remember. So it's still a big Manchester Blue-like thing.
That's all you need. Just paint them all blue, and it will remind you of your beloved Mank.
My beloved Mank.
As it's known.
Sounds wrong.
Around these parts. Anyway, you can get that New Star Soccer still at the moment. It's £1.99 on Google Play, or it's free on the App Store. Fill your football boots. After much teasing, Angry Birds Go has been not only announced, but also trailered. I don't know if that's a word, trailered, but it is now. Yeah, they've released the first trailer for Angry Birds Go, which is the first major deviation the birds are going to experience from the franchise, because I'm not counting Bad Piggies, because Bad Piggies didn't have any birds in it. This, it's non-canon.
Didn't have any birds in it, did it?
No,
birds in that one.
No birds, mate. It was rubbish. It was naff. Yeah, the Angry Birds Go has got actual birds in it. It is a kart racer. Rovio's gone all Mario Kart or Sonic Kart or any of the other kart racers you can name. And it is coming out on December the 11th. There is a trailer right now linked into the bottom of the podcast story. Go and have a look because, cynical git though I generally am, it looks quite good.
Yeah, I have to say it looks really rather good.
Yeah, like I was all ready to be like, yeah, it's just a knockoff free to play because it's free to play again, a knockoff free to play game, and then it's going to, you know, whip it together. It's another kind of a poor man's Mario Kart or something like that. The visuals are really
it's very pretty,
really nice. It's got that. It's like almost cartoony, but with almost a hint of cell shaded like quality to
it.
Like,
you know what? It reminds me of this is going back quite a long time, but before Sumo Digital had a good time with their Sonic races. The only other race I ever thought lived up to Mario Kart was Wacky Races.
Oh yeah,
on Dreamcast, and that was cell shaded in a slight way, not quite in a Jet Set Radio way, but in a slight way. And this looks very similar. Actually, it has that. And the advantage they got is that another area where all these races, all these carts suffer, is that they don't have the lineup of characters that Nintendo does that are immediately recognizable. Whereas you could say that, you know, although they're all birds, but Rovio does.
Well, there are millions upon millions of people around the world who know the difference between the yellow bird and the red bird.
Exactly.
And they do and stuff. So, yeah, you're absolutely
arguably
right.
Arguably more than know the difference between Mario and Luigi these days. So it's, if anyone can do it, they can. And it certainly looks like they've spent some money on it.
Yes, it looks properly slick, and I was a little bit surprised. From the trailer, I say go and have a look at it, you can see for yourself. You'll be racing against all the other birds and piggies as well, naturally. It looks like there's lots of gold coins that you'll be collecting in a very sort of Mario style. Loads of alternative powers too. So you've got shots in the trailer of like one case, floating piggies appear above one of the carts and like float it into the air. The red bird seems to like jump off of his cart and zoom into the distance. The yellow bird explodes into this massive ball and starts trundling down the hill and then zooms back again. So it looks like they're going to be all these special power-up boosts that you can use while you're racing. And it looks fun. I want to go. I really do.
Yeah, those are good.
Like I say, I was kind of ready to go, oh, yeah, whatever. But it stands a chance.
If it has the pigs making their laughing noise as they drive past you, I shall love it and adore it and play it endlessly.
Forevermore. That is good to know. Well, amongst the blurb that they released when they announced the trailer, you're going to be able to use those telepods that came with Angry Birds Star Wars 2 and the Jenga toys too, which will let you teleport characters into the game. So you can do that thing where if you've bought presumably the Star Wars characters, I guess. It also comes with a whole bunch of other nonsense, including like clothing and footwear and loads of other stationery and books and basically just a load of tat, I'm going to say. Which probably won't go down well with Rovio, but whatever. It's just, yeah, this the standard crap that comes alongside Angry Birds, which is just marketed and emblazoned upon every possible plastic surface.
So it's just down for phones at the moment.
Yeah, it'll be on the iPad and iOS and Android.
I can see them putting this on consoles as well. I can see this.
Could be. Speaking of, Angry Birds Trilogy is now available for Vita, or at least will be when you listen to this, for the bargain price of £35. I can't get over that. I know they've put it onto consoles, and I assume it must have shifted some units.
But, probably would have done by some silly parents, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You get a nice box with it.
It's not good enough, man. I need more than a box if I'm going to shell out 30 quid on games that are essentially worth about a combined total of £2.97. Seems a bit silly, but whatever. This looks like it'll be fun. However, it is free to play, so it all depends on how they handle the freemium thing. So it could be good. I'm going to guess there are energy systems involved. That's what they do with races, isn't it? CSR and Real Racing 3 and everything. There'll be a bar that goes down when you race. You can pay to put petrol in the tank or just leave it alone for a day. I'm going to put my money down now. That's what it's going to be.
Save your money for when you need the fuel.
So December 11th, mark it in your calendar if you give a toss. Sticking kind of tangentially... Yes, all right, I'm getting more casual as the podcast wears on. Sticking tangentially with the Angry Birds thing, Angry Birds, as we all know, has a spin-off, which is Angry Birds Star Wars. Now, the Tiny Tower franchise, which isn't technically a franchise at this point, but it kind of is. Tiny Towers, then you had Pocket Planes, and then you had Pocket Trains, which is all essentially the same sort of thing. It's a resource management building strategy game in which you look after your little pixel people and get them jobs and build them flats if you're in Tiny Tower, or send them on missions with trains in Pocket Trains.
Isn't that just like Dream Heights? It sounds like a huge
lawsuit.
Rip-off to me.
Lawsuit! Exactly. Well, if you're sick of playing Tiny Towers, how about playing Tiny Death Star? Yes, yes. Pixelbit, the guys behind it, have teamed up with Disney now, rather than LucasArts, I suppose, and got the Star Wars license, and they've made a Tiny Tower version where you take charge of the Death Star. You are Darth Vader, and you have to build, cantinas, and rent out areas to attract other bitizens, nasty bitizens, members of the Imperial galaxy. And you basically become this kind of, like... Jedi real estate mogul or something.
Well, you'd be a Sith real estate mogul, surely.
Yeah, well, that's true. Well, he was a Jedi once, though, Keith. But yeah. Turned.
When then, he fell in a load of fire.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and screamed at Ewan McGregor. That's what happened. So I like the idea of him being my landlord, coming round every month.
You'd get everything sorted before he came round. You wouldn't...
You
wouldn't be a mess.
You know, you don't want to disturb his force. Or, consequences. Yeah, so it's been soft-launched in Australia and, I think, New Zealand, or maybe just Australia. So any Aussie listeners, you can get it right now. The rest of us will be waiting a little bit. And early impressions are that it's kind of almost pretty much the same game as Tiny Tower. Mark did a big hands-on with it and reported that, yeah, it's pretty much the same. What they have done well is they've dealt with the Star Wars license really nicely. So you've got, like, the Mos, kind of Mos Eisley-influenced cafes and apartments that obviously match the decor and the styling of the Star Wars universe. All the little characters, little pixel art versions of stormtroopers and walkers and Jedi people and all that. There's a Hoth-themed ice cream shop because, you know, Hoth is cold and ice creams are cold. You can tell they've thought this through.
You don't want ice cream when it's cold, do you?
No, but like Hoth, I'm sure they could just, you know, they could make a fortune with those snow cones by just, you know, natural resource, isn't it, Keith? It's just economics.
It's disgusting. It's disgusting.
Not yellow snow cones, Keith. It's flavored love, flavored blue flavor, the best of all flavors, because you can have strawberry and you can have lemon and lime, whatever, or you can have blue flavor, which tastes of blue.
I have no idea where you're going with this now.
You know when you're a kid and you kind of wanted slush puppies when you were a kid. At least I did. Until you grew up and realised that they were kind of rubbish. You always thought slush puppies were kind of cool. And didn't you?
I can't say I ever thought about it.
Well, I always wanted the blue ones because it's that like unnatural colour that's not based on any specific flavour. It's always rust.
You were one of those guys who would buy... the cheap brand green cola at the corner shop and stuff like that. Then
No, I wasn't.
I used to like Mr. Freeze.
Skank,
I used to like Mr. Freeze. They were good.
Never
a big slush puppy fan. But.
I was drawn to the blue because it's unnatural. There's no fruit in nature which is blue, at least apart from the blueberry. But it's not really.
Yeah.
You know, but it's never blueberry flavour, is it? It's always raspberry.
What do you mean?
The blue flavored slush puppy was a raspberry flavor. If you get a raspberry,
know.
It's always blue.
I don't think I had a slush puppy until I was like 18. I have no idea.
Oh, it was an impoverished childhood. That's what it was. Well, I always looked longingly at them because obviously I couldn't afford them either. But yeah, what was where did
How
that
are
come
they?
from?
Are they ridiculously priced? What?
I think they were, yeah, when I was a kid.
I think I've only seen a slush puppy machine thing at like Alton Towers or something. I've not.
Well, you haven't been to Hoth, clearly.
Not for a while,
Where it
no.
all comes from. So, have a look at the story on the site. You can also see a great big preview. We'll link you up to that as well. And it's something to look forward to if you're into the tiny tower thing. And I suppose you like a bit of Star Wars. Could be all right.
Well, it's got to be better than those Vodafone adverts with Yoda in, doesn't it? So
Well, yes. Any.
Disney are doing these kind of licensing deals. I'm much more of a fan.
Okay, so that's my knowledge tapped out for the moment. However, Keith, seeing as you're here and you are a Windows phone owner, a proud Windows phone owner,
Right.
I understand there's been a development this week in the
Not
world of Windows.
for Windows Phone.
No?
This is for Windows. Yeah.
Oh, okay, which might not seem like it's linked to us, but it is because of the tablets,
It's
the
on
Windows.
tablets, isn't it? It's on
Yeah.
tablets. Tablet.
That you've got one of.
I do have one off. Yeah, bless it. It's just spent the last few hours updating,
I
using
saw
up my bandwidth.
it. Right. I saw it in real life. I thought it was never supposed to leave the house, but you brought it to the last conference.
Well, but it was Manchester, wasn't it? So, the whole of Manchester is my house, essentially.
Oh, I see. I
I don't
missed
take
the
it
little
anywhere
sign.
else. I have taken it to London once. I took it to BAFTA, but that's BAFTA. Yeah, I'll stop showing off now. No, Windows 8.1 is out today.
Ooh.
Anyone who's interested has already had it because the beta has been going for several months, and anyone who was remotely interested got it
Okay.
through that because you could, in the same way that you didn't even have to be a developer, like you have to pretend to be if you want an iOS 7 before it came out. So it was very popular anyway. So, but the it's out now fully, and it's kind of being staggered out. They had a lot of trouble last time in that everyone tried to get this beta at the same time. Everyone who thinks of Windows updates, you think of Windows Update and you think of that, the thing coming up and the green
And
bar going across
16
and it.
different, like installing one of 24 updates, that thing, yeah.
I mean, Windows still does do that, but it kind of that would have been how they. I mean, because essentially what this is what they would have called before a service pack. It's one of the major service packs.
Ah, yes, I remember those days. Windows XP. Ah.
Exactly, but in post-Apple style, now you have to brand everything and you have to make it a product of its own. So it actually you download it from the store. So it's you open up the App Store and it takes up half the screen and it's get Windows 8.1 free here.
Oh,
And
right.
it's delivered as a kind of, a product as its own. But it's worth it. I mean, the changes aren't massive. But I mean, the press jumped on the whole. They've brought back the start button thing,
Oh, have
which
they
they
now?
haven't. No, they haven't. I mean, we never went anywhere. It just it wasn't where people. It wasn't in the bottom left like it used to be.
Where was it?
Well, you just had to go. You had to. It was actually in the bottom left. You had to move your mouse and your finger over to the bottom left, and then you'd be taken back to the start menu.
Oh, I
So
see.
now instead, there's a button there with the Windows logo on, which does exactly the same thing. But this appears to be enough to have fooled a load of thick journalists who never used it anyway into thinking the start button is back, which is fair enough if that's what you want in the story, which is obviously what Microsoft wanted. But I mean, it's mainly aesthetic changes in that the start screen and where you have all your apps and your games, you can personalize it even more now and put them in separate areas and make some bigger and make some smaller. I mean, it's
Okay.
very Windows Phone-like actually now. It's kind
Because
of.
it's all about those live tiles, isn't it? About customizing your home screen and having big ones which have active bits on the front and little ones
Yeah, exactly.
elsewhere. And
So you can make some that are no bigger than a normal app tile would be on any OS, and then you can have some huge ones like I did with lovely, pretty pictures of the weather. Or you can have it so your Facebook and your tweet notifications are in a big one as well, come through with people's faces, said
right,
something
yeah.
horrible about you pops up. So I mean, it's little things like that and changing the wallpapers and stuff that make it just look a little bit slicker. And being Microsoft, it's the kind of thing that actually Windows 8 should have launched like this. A year down the line, they've
You're
made
finally getting it.
a few changes. It doesn't actually change much at all, but it does seem to have given it a lot of better press. A lot of the people who didn't like it before suddenly seem to like it now. I suspect actually because they've actually had to use it rather than just judging it before they used it. But it and the store is coming on well. It actually has a Facebook app now.
Oh my! Today. It didn't have a Facebook app for this.
It didn't have a Facebook app because you didn't need one because you just because
Windows 8 users don't have any friends.
Well, no, because Surface is it's a tablet you have in landscape mode. You just used Facebook because it has a keyboard and you just use
the browser rather than the app.
It's the same as when the Twitter app launched. Everyone was like, oh, it's got an official Twitter app. I'll still keep using Twitter.com because it's easier. But I suppose you can get notifications and stuff through. So the app store looks very different to how it did as well before. So they've made a lot of improvements for users and developers. It'll be interesting to see whether the discovery on the store itself take up is better than it was before. It seems to have been
people
up and down.
People actually finding the apps and the updates.
Yeah, exactly. Lots of developers weren't too keen. Essentially, it was just like a row of apps, and there wasn't much there to grab you. Now they've got all kinds of discovery slots on the front now, and it animates through certain apps at the front. It reminded me actually of, funny enough, when Touchpad had its app store, it had similar innovations of it where it had videos embedded into each app's page, which no one else has jumped on yet. But it'd be interesting to see whether anyone makes any more money.
Sometimes the discovery thing is done well. I quite like the way that the app store looks now on iOS. That does a very good job of scrolling the kind of the recommended games and the editor's picks and all that sort of stuff. Like a lot of the brand new games that came out this week that are good are actually placed front and center on the app store. However, things like, I don't like the Xbox One. I still think the Xbox One is big and ugly and cluttered and a pain. I don't mind the tiles, that's fine. But the stuff they promote is always a bit whack, I think. They're sort of putting the wrong things on it.
I don't think I've used the store on Xbox for a long time.
Really? Oh, no, it's a bit of a pain. And just the Xbox dashboard in general. I don't mind it being at right angles and looking a bit Windows 8 and stuff. That's cool, I'm fine with that. But the stuff that they're flagging up is always really naff trailers and games that I'm not at all interested in. So you wind up with a screen full of visual noise I don't really want. And you can't do anything about it. You can't get rid of it. And obviously it's only going to get worse with the new Xboxes, which have new Xbox and PS3 taken a massive hit now with Watch Dogs being cancelled. Not cancelled, pushed back. I don't want to get any nasty letters now. Which one did you... it's not been cancelled. Oh, their brains out. Which ones have you ordered? Did you order the PS3 or the Xbox or both or either?
Or do you mean the PS4? Because I can go get the PS3
one of those,
right now.
Perhaps. Sorry, I'm having
I've ordered none, and I won't be getting either for a good year because it's pointless buying either.
Yeah, completely. I'm in the same place. I was holding off because A, there weren't that many games I was interested in, and B, give it 6 months for all the first wave of consoles to blow up in people's faces so you can get the new chips. But now, everyone who has pre-ordered has basically lost, they've lost Watch Dogs. But also, there's rumours floating around at the moment that Drive is being pushed back from launch as well. Which means, essentially, if you've ordered a PS3, you've got... I keep saying PS3. This console generational change is going to be hard on me. Yeah, if you've ordered a PS4, basically, Killzone, and that's it.
There isn't Watch Dog was the only one that interested me on either.
Yeah,
not enough to actually go and buy it just for that because it's also on current gen consoles. And that's what the weird thing is, that a lot of the lead titles, so you got Assassin's Creed is making a big noise as well, are hedging their bets and launching on current gen systems as well.
Yes.
So everyone is very wary that these two machines are probably going to have the slowest uptake, I would have thought, of any new console generation for some time. And Nintendo's gone first and fallen flat on its face and discovered just how hard it is to sell a console at the moment. But I mean, funny enough that bringing it back round to phones is that I wasn't going to be there on day one. As much as I like getting something shiny and new, I wasn't going to be. But I probably would have bought one before the end of the year. But then I was loaned, you know, a nice new Lumia with an amazing camera for 2 weeks and decided I have much more fun taking photos with, you know, 41 megapixels on than I do... playing on a console, which I just don't think there is that. There is from certain people, and I've had this conversation on Twitter several times, I just don't think there's that drive for new consoles. I think the ones we have still got stuff that they can do. And all the new features that they've put in these new ones, so whether you're talking about the Xbox One's focus on multimedia and stuff like this, and Sony's linking it up with the PS Vita and so forth, all of those things could do technically perfectly well with updates to their firmware on the existing systems. There's nothing that actually links. There's no great harbour innovation with either of them. So they exist purely because they make things look a bit flashier.
Connect 2, Keith. Connect 2.
Well, Connect 2, yeah. I mean, I'd have to use one. But, you know, you could almost just launch a new... You know, again, that's a hardware in its own right, isn't it? So you could just launch an updated... In the same way that Nintendo updated, you know, the Wii sensor and Wii Remote halfway through, and well, you could do that. It's I just don't think there's that desire. I know it's been a long time.
It has been a long time. I'm
these
excited.
Two machines are very capable, and
I'm excited to see what happens in the long term. That's the thing. I'm glad it's happening now. I'm not going to be there on day one because there's nothing I really want to play that badly. I'm kind of the same as you here. But in, you know, 6 months after it's been released, or in a year, and the shovelware has been gotten out of the way, and the new releases are coming that are actually interesting, and they've learned how to use the machines a bit better and stuff like that, that's when all the good stuff comes. I'm very excited for that. So I will be there.
You've got past the first ones, which were all broken, and,
exactly.
to be sent back. It's funny, actually. I mean, the first PS4 advert, I think it's the US advert, so I don't think they'll run it over here. They tend to do different campaigns. But there was on YouTube today, I saw, and it's got two guys singing Perfect Day as they trade blows, fighting each other, and then in a car, and then, you know, it's and then they're at war, and it's, you know, kind of saying they're doing this from their living room. This is how they're spending their weekend. But, you know, it's a focus on multiplayer, which is very similar to how the last consoles launched, when you had all the old Xbox adverts, some of which got banned, where they're running around shooting each other with, you know, their hands and dropping water balloons on each other. So you kind of think all that multiplayer stuff, if an ad company, if they've gone to an ad company, you know, and spent a lot of money and said, please make a flashy advert that sells this console, that sells it something unique, and that's all they can come up with, something that you can already do now, I think they're struggling.
Now with added Twitter. About this week, very exciting new release from Samogo, the team behind Beat Sneak Bandit and Year Walk, that spooky first person adventure explorer thingy. The new release is Device 6, and it is a peculiar text adventure, but it kind of does weird things with the text adventure format. I'm going to talk about it later, so I'll just tease you for the time being. It's worth finding out about this game, though. I will explain it to you, and I will list the various reasons why you probably should get it. It's out right now. It's £2.49 or $3.99. More on that later. If you don't want to spend any money, Batman Arkham Origins has appeared, which is the free-to-play companion piece, essentially, to the Batman Arkham Origins console. It's made by NetherRealm, the same guys who did Injustice Gods Among Us and the previous Batman game, Batman Arkham City Lockdown, I think it was called. It is a side-on brawler, basically. And I don't know if you played the other ones. If Peter was here, he'd be jumping up and down like a crazy person.
But I hate superheroes.
Oh, yeah, of course. I forgot about your men dressed up as things issues.
I can have that rant again if you want. I've done it many times.
That's quite okay, yes. He's anti-Batman, listeners, and anti-Superman, and anyone who wears their pants outside of their tights. Although, that doesn't happen anymore.
Dressed up needlessly.
Okay.
Yeah, go on.
All right, then.
My life, don't dress up first. That's what I'm saying, you know.
Okay.
Don't let me fall off that building just because you run off to birthdays to buy a special outfit.
You want him to run out there in just his socks, be like, oh, I was in the shower, sorry, but I caught you from this...
Well, preferably, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I suppose that works out.
He's selling it to me now.
Well, this game, I've played it very briefly today. I've done a little hands-on video for AppSpy. I did the tutorial missions in the first few fights. It plays pretty much like Injustice. The fighting's not particularly involved. You're literally just tapping the screen. You know, tap the screen and you'll punch a bad man in the face. Occasionally, prompts will flash up for you to swipe left and swipe down to execute slightly more flashy moves. And there are also some context-sensitive buttons that appear that you can do special kinds of blocks, you can add health, and maybe do a fancy attack. It all looks fine, but ultimately, it just involves you just kind of doing that. It's not very engaging. I don't find it very engaging. The way they're trying to sell it to you is that by unlocking stuff in the mobile game, that gets you costumes and things in the actual console version. So they're linking the two experiences together as before. I mean, it's okay. You tap it a few times and it's not bad. It looks very good. It's still, I assume it's still being powered by the Unreal Engine. I don't know. It's got an energy system, obviously, so you'll eventually run out and have to leave it alone or cough up some money to put some juice back in Batman's carton, and you might get some fun out of it. It's about half a gig download, so it's a bit hefty. But yeah, there'll be reviews up very, very soon. Check it out. In a less free-to-play angle, and a slightly more survival horror stance, Indigo Lake has been released, which is a first-person shooter, which is sort of cribbing from the Slender Man games a little bit, as in you're wandering around in dark forests with a torch. Only this time you've actually got a gun, which apparently is useful against spirits. So ghosts and stuff pop up, and you have this tracker gun that you can shoot, which apparently scares them off. Which suggests to me that they're not very good ghosts. What ghost is scared of a gun?
Maybe it means, like, bottles of vodka.
I'm not following.
Spirits.
Ah, no.
Everyone else got that 30 seconds before you did. I'm sure
they did, yes. But no, apparently it's ghouly, ghosty spirits, and you shoot them with a gun and they go away, which, yeah, I don't... Unless it's a positron glider from Ghostbusters, in which case, fine.
But it sounds a bit like old black things in Alan Wake that you'd shine a torch on.
That's right, you had to torch them to death, didn't you? But then you didn't. Did you shoot them once they'd been torched down enough? That's how it worked, wasn't it? You torched them for a bit and then you shot them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Whatever.
You blew the black stuff off them, I think.
Yeah.
And then shot.
Oh, it's been a while. That game, I know you liked it a lot. I liked large elements of it, and then the plot was stupid, and some of the dialogue was awful.
I loved it.
Yeah, no. I mean, it was, yeah.
The dialogue was no worse than any other game. Like, people were raving about The Last of Us, but the dialogue in The Last of Us is no better than this.
Oh, it is. Game. It is.
No, the only game that I've played this generation that has good dialogue is L.A. Noire. All the rest are the same old hacked stuff that you get.
I mean, it's still fairly blockbustery, don't get me wrong, The Last of Us, but it was on. It was better than Alan Wake. Alan Wake, the bit that sticks in me through that whole experience was when the shit was going down, and he runs over to his mate's place, that barn where they have the band out back, and you've got a bunch of zombies and you're on stage. That bit was a bit silly, but just before that, you run in and there's like mad zombies all around you and the evil's bearing down, and you go and sit on a sofa and then you fall asleep for 12 hours. And it was the stupidest thing I've ever... Literally, just like, oh my God, they're holding them off at the door. And he just goes, oh, no, demons at the window. I'll just have a little kip. And then he just goes to sleep and wakes up.
Isn't that when you've been drugged?
No, he wasn't drugged. He just went in and out of kip. It was rubbish. I was like,
I don't even remember that. I played that game a lot.
It was silly. I completed it and everything, but yeah. Anyway, this is a horror game, and there are trees, and that links to Alan Wake in some tangential way. You can get it right now. The review is on the way. It's £1.49 or $1.99 if you like. What else have we got? We've actually got loads, so I'm going to race through them real quick. Firstly, Fist of Awesome is a pixel art brawler in which you play as a lumberjack person who goes around punching deer and stuff. Apparently the controls are really good. It's obviously done with a big sense of humour. It's a bit silly. Can get a bit dull after a while because it's kind of repetitive. But maybe worth a look. £2.49 or $3.99. MIMPI, which is by Crescent Moon Games. And I quite like some of their stuff. It looks alright. What you do is control a little dog who's wandering around this kind of very surreal, colourful environment. Looks quite nice, actually. And you have to get him to places by moving the environment, like adjusting platforms and solving little puzzles and things. Apparently it's not that challenging and the jumping bits are a bit fiddly, but it's quite a nice vibe and it looks sort of good. So, you know, might be fun. £1.49 or $1.99. Ubisoft have gotten in on the new releases thing. Rabbids Big Bang. You're a Wii person, aren't you? Do you have a Wii?
I do have one, yeah.
Yeah, did you get in on the Rabbids? Because I know Rabbids games appeared on that, didn't they?
No, I didn't. I only play Mario Kart on my Wii. It's a Mario Kart machine.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Well, I know the raving...
is worthless.
The raving Rabbids thing has been around for a while.
Yeah, isn't it? But I think it's one of them strange IP that I think Ubisoft think is much more valuable than it actually is. I don't think it's really made that much of an impact, has it?
No, not the Rabbids. Well, the Rabbids have arrived on iOS, and it's been done in kind of an Angry Birds Space style. So You control two rabbits. They start off on a planet, and one of them has a baseball bat, and you use that to whack the other one off the surface of the planet and into space. Then you have to control the little jet blaster that's on the rabbit's back to get him into the orbit of planets, wherein there are little power-ups and things that you can collect, and the idea is to steer him towards the power-ups and move him kind of in and out of orbit. And if you've played Angry Birds Space, that should sound quite familiar. Mark's played it. Controls are floaty and a bit hard to get to grips with, he says. And we'll have to see how the whole upgrade thing works. It's 69p99 right now. What else? Oh, Nier Occult. I played this. Match 3 puzzler with a kind of tech slant on it. So you can see the backgrounds are all like computer chips and lots of neon colours and everything. And it looks like you're hacking stuff. Discs appear from the left-hand side of the screen and scroll over to the right, all different colours. You have to tap them to get rid of them, but you have to have chosen the appropriate colour first from a palette on the left-hand side. The idea is to, if there are multiple colours on screen, so if you've got a whole bunch of red ones, you can kind of swipe through and eliminate them all at the same time. So basically, it's a time-based match 3 puzzler. Solve looks okay, and it's quite fast, like really fast-paced. I played it last night, and even the early levels, it's like the speed picks up kind of quickly, so it's quite twitchy. Might be fun in the long term. Have to play more to know for sure. But it's £1.49 or $1.99. CSR Classics. CSR being the big free-to-play racer that have really took off and made all of the money. Now, you cover the business angle. Is that game still making money? Are Natural Motion still raking it in? Or was it a big spike at the beginning and then it's dropped off?
No, they don't put out stats, but no, it had quite a long tail. It took quite a while to get going, actually. I don't think it was immediately a big hit monetization-wise, but I think it's still... I don't think it's doing the peak. What it was doing a peak, I forget what the figure is, but it was doing...
It was like 12 million a month, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was doing something... You know, I think it was even shorter than that, actually. It was doing something impressive. I don't know if it's doing that anymore, but it's certainly still popular.
I mean, I imagine they're working on a sequel. I can only imagine they are, but...
Yes, I think they probably are.
Yeah. But in the meantime, CSR Classics, which is the same sort of game, only you've got a bunch of old school cars, so muscle cars and stuff like that. The gameplay is still very much the same, but you're doing it with classic cars. It's free to download just like CSR, so you can give that a bash. And I will give honourable mention to Machinarium Pocket Edition, because I bloody love Machinarium. It was a point-and-click game released by Amanita Design about 3 years ago, I'm going to say, on the PC. It got ported over to the iPad, but it hasn't appeared on the iPhone until now. It's a gorgeous, hand-drawn, arty, quirky little point-and-click adventure. The story is told through pictograms rather than any text. So your little robot, whom you control, who's looking for his lost girlfriend robot, has to go across a bunch of different environments and solve a lot of weird puzzles, quite weird point-and-clicky puzzles, if I'm honest. When he speaks, little speech bubbles appear, but all you get is little animated, very crude drawings to kind of tell you what's going on. It's incredibly charming. It's really smart and clever. And you can now get it on iPhone. They've introduced a pinch-to-zoom option because it's all too small and fiddly otherwise. So now you can grab it on your iPhone. If you've already got it on the iPad, that app will become a universal app. So you can now just put it on your iPhone if you want to. But if you want to buy it brand new, you can get it for £1.49 or $1.99. If you haven't and you like adventure games, it really, really is worth it. It's a cracker. Come sit upon my throne of games. Right, I'm not going to stand on ceremony. Here we are. Throne of Games. Chamber wherein it lies. Brilliant. Right, I'm jumping on. Device 6, people. Device 6. Mentioned it briefly earlier. It is a text adventure, what you can play on your iPhone or iPad, but it does weird things with the text adventure conventions. So I'm not going to put too much in the way of plot detail into this little chat, because it's a kind of spoilerific game. You don't want to know too much about it going in, but I can talk about the mechanics and why you should probably get it. So you play as a girl called Anna who wakes up on an island, and she has that plot essential amnesia that people have in games and stories. And you're trying to guide her towards some kind of resolution. It's all told through text on the page. So each level begins, you scroll maybe down the screen and blocks of text will appear beneath. It's all punctuated with little bits of art, peculiar black and white images, some of which are as if they're in the background. They have a lot of images that use this parallax scrolling thing. So as the window box scrolls up the page, the box with the image, the picture behind will move as if it's in the distance, in the background. As you read what is going on, the shape of the text is influenced directly by the content. So if you're in a room, for example, then the text will be presented in a box, in like a square, a room shape. If Anna then decides to go into a corridor, as the story goes, it suddenly turns into a single long sentence that snakes down the page or snakes along the side of the screen, as if you were wandering down a corridor. If she then comes to a corner in the corridor, the actual text will then turn 90 degrees and start going down. And you then have to scroll the screen down in a different direction. This means you're constantly turning your iPhone or your iPad 90 degrees or 180 degrees in order to read the text. Which is really weird, obviously, but it's very smart. It's kind of linking you into what the character is experiencing, what she's experiencing in the game. Again, I won't say too much, but it's a lot of weird kind of cognitive dissonance. She doesn't know where she is. She's very confused, and she's seeing a lot of weird things that are freaking her out, very disorientated. And so by using these weird text trails and changing the shape of the text and making you constantly switch your perspective, it's kind of disorienting you along the way, putting you in her shoes, if you like. You share her mental state. It's obviously full of puzzles as well. It's not just text. You're not just reading. So you'll come across things where you're putting ciphers into keypads, or you're triggering buttons or peculiar little mechanical devices. There are also audio cues as well. So you might be listening to perhaps radio stations or something like that, tuning in and out to find out little clues. It looks phenomenal. Like, if you're into the way things are presented, if you like things looking good, but just the way that the text moves across the screen, the way it's laid out, is kind of fascinating. Like, there'll be instances where she's almost like having a panic attack, and the text will suddenly start to fragment down the screen and overlap and start to look really, really tortured and like it's been scrawled down in a hurry. And obviously, again, it's reflecting her mental state, and it really works. It's quite powerful and effective. It's really quite creepy, too. The whole game has a bizarre, like, undertone, and some of the images are quite sort of disturbing, and certainly some of the noises you hear are unsettling. So it's got this bizarre, like, if you played Yearwalk again, that had a creepy vibe. This does too. My only criticism, as with Yearwalk, is it's a bit short. I would have liked it to have gone on for a little longer, but it's just such a clever reimagining of the format. The puzzles are smart, and they're unusual, and they're a little bit creepy. The narrative is dark, but it's constantly kind of engaging and multi-layered, and working out exactly what's going on is kind of a little mini-game in itself in terms of the narrative. I couldn't recommend it highly enough, really. You should really get it if you have any interest in what iOS gaming's all about. This is another game that exemplifies what the platform can do if you really think about, hey, I've got a touchscreen, what can I do with this to make it sing, to make it work well? And Device 6 absolutely does that. I think it's £2.49 or £2.99, something like that, $4 or $5. It's a bit on the short side, but it is totally worth it. I suggest you grab it post haste. Right, that's me done. What have you been playing, Keith? Have a seat.
What have I been playing?
Yeah, you've been playing a thing, I hear. Have a seat and tell me all about it.
Very briefly today. I was going to give it more time, but then I had to keep tapping away on my keyboard.
To
pay the bills.
That's right. Yeah. Make a knee-jerk reactionary judgment.
Yeah, that's what I do best. I've been playing briefly. Boom! Tanks. I say that because it is boom! Exclamation mark. Tanks.
I got you.
Which I know sometimes podcaster and my boss, John Jordan, has played through to completion, I believe. So he'd be much more qualified to talk about this.
Oh, really?
Yes, it's free to play. And to put it quite simply, it is CSR racing with tanks.
Oh.
Not racing, obviously, that would be a bit weird, but rather shooting at a rival tank as they shoot back at you.
Okay.
Well, there is a bit of a game of timing in it, actually, so you have to aim at your target by kind of holding the cursor down and dragging it to where the tank has moved. It's moving, so that's not necessarily easy. Mm-hmm. And then once you're lined up, there's a little kind of gauge at the bottom, and you have to shoot when it's in the ultimate area in the middle or whatever.
Right.
So it swings back and forth, then it reloads and it goes again. So it's all about tapping it at the right point to cause the most damage. I'm barely into it because it's free to play. I'm assuming that there'll be battles that I can't win in the same way there are races in CSR that you just can't win unless you've either grinded for a while and performed the necessary upgrades. It has the same look and feel, actually. The menus are very similar to CSR, if a bit more complicated. I did find myself in some of the early menus when it's obviously trying to introduce you to all the different stages of play and then also try and tempt you into the store to go and spend some money. If you buy some coins at the beginning, you get given VIP status, which then seems to add to your... So when you finish a level, it kind of almost acts as a multiplier to for whatever score you get.
Oh, right.
So it's quite... I don't know. I mean, John covers this kind of thing in a column he does for Biz, how heavy a game monetizes when you start it up. But to me, it seemed quite aggressive, actually, in that first 20 minutes. I did feel like it really, really wanted me to spend, which I didn't, because I was just trying to get used to the game before I decided whether I want to spend on it or not.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's presented very nicely. The graphics are quite slick. It runs a bit beastly on my iPod Touch. Initially, you couldn't get it on iPod Touch.
Oh, right.
For some strange reason. Then they updated it and you could. And it's a bit jerky. But the kind of 3D modeling of it and the explosions is not bad for mobile. It's quite. So I can see why it does run a bit jerkily on my fifth gen iPod Touch. I suspect if you got a 5S or whatever, you weren't getting any of that. The battles are so short, in the same way the races are so short in CSR, that your brain says, well, do another one. You might as well do another one.
Yeah.
And of course, if you've run out, you've ordered a new tank that you've got to wait for or pay to get it there and then, I suspect you'll be inclined to pay. But then, you know, if you're enjoying it, you're enjoying it. So, you know, I don't see anything wrong with that. But yeah, it has a nice... I think it's Codemasters' first crack at this. I don't know how much of a following Codemasters have in say the US or elsewhere around the world, but they're kind of one of the last few remaining old British publishers, really.
Yeah, because they relaunched Colin McRae, didn't they? They did Colin McRae Rally.
Yeah, I mean, I had a drink actually back at GDC with someone from Codemasters who was talking about how they were really going to go for mobile now. They realised that's where they should be, and Colin McRae was going to be the start of it, and assuming that went well, which I assume it must have hit whatever targets they had for it, they were going to go for it with a lot of original IP, of which this appears to be one of the first. And it's very savvy. The way it's presented in this slightly comic book style is exactly how you would do it, actually. If you're doing something that could quite easily be overly macho tanks, they've kind of gone for the more cartoony comic book take on warfare.
But
you can get a tank you can pay extra to get your tank emblazoned in a Union flag or so forth. So
can you get a Manchester City flag?
I doubt it. I'll have to play for longer. I don't know how relative the tanks are in it to real tanks. I'm not a tank.
Not being a big tank driving enthusiast.
Not a big tank man, yeah. But there are lots of different types of tanks there. So if you're into tanks in the same way that people who like CSR were into cars, I can imagine that could be a great motivator for you.
Okay, is that out everywhere now? Has it been out for a while?
It's been out for a month or so.
Ah, okay.
And I did mean to get it, and then when I did go to buy it, and confusingly, it was one of these games that was actually on I could see it on the store and go to download it, and it installed it, and then it came up with a pop-up telling me it wouldn't run on an iPod Touch, which is, I've not seen that before. Usually they're just, if it's not compatible with your device, you just don't see it on the store, do you? But
oh, that's true.
So it's been on there for a good 3-4 weeks, if not longer. So everyone who's listening to me has probably already played it.
Well, you say John's already completed it. Do you think you're going to go back?
I will have a go, as much as I want to have a go on any game. Probably if I have a spare 5 minutes. I mean, that was the funny thing about CSR, in that it became my... without wanting to divulge too much about my personal life, often when I get into bed, I'm not tired, and I look for something to do for 10 minutes. This is sounding very wrong.
Oh, yes.
Whether that's checking
your choices, your choice is gaming?
Whether that's Twitter or Instagram or something on my iPod, which has to be sat there, then that, you know, or Vine or whatever, then that fills the gap. And for a while, CSR became that little 10-minute fix before bed. Which would often spill beyond 10 minutes when I was playing it a lot. So I can imagine that this could fit into a similar slot. I think, I think the only thing that I would tweak a little bit is some of the UI with the menus. It's a little bit too much I mean, this is a whole big study. You can get whole talks about this at conferences, about where you place your buttons, what colour they are, how big they are, what font they have on them. I would advise that they went to some of those talks, because at the moment it's a little bit garish and you're a bit confusing as to what you should be doing or what you can do.
It's true. The GUI can be a big turn-off, can't it?
Well, it's not even that they're directed to the store. It's just there's almost a little bit too much to do on each screen. It's a bit hard to tell where the natural path is to progression. But yeah, otherwise, I'm quite impressed with it.
Boom tanks, you say?
Boom! Exclamation mark tanks. Yeah.
Fantastico. All right then. Well, thank you for that, Mr. Andrew. That brings us to the end of this week. Just the two of us this week. And I think, I don't know whether Peter's going to be back next week. I think he might be off into a strange place. He's heading off to Kiev.
Neither of us will be here, will we?
Oh, really?
Oh, no, it's Wednesday, isn't it? Yeah, no, we won't.
I don't know. I get confused. I try not. We should be doing this off mic, but whatever. Let everybody share in our diary arrangements. Why not? it'll be my birthday next week. It'll be my birthday podcast.
On the actual day?
Yeah, on the actual day. Like, we had Peter's a couple of weeks ago, and it'll be mine, so they're all falling.
This.
I know, they're all falling in strange places. But join us again for festivities and fun, and of course, mobile gaming next week. Thanks for listening. Bye!